Dear Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in the same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. So good evening, everyone, and let us begin with August the 27th, 1926. Here Jesus speaks about the title he wants to give to this work, and he also speaks about the person who must take responsibility for carrying this out, and that's the part that applies to us. As I was in my usual state, Louisa said, my beloved Jesus made me see the Reverend Father, who must occupy himself with the printing of the writings on his adorable will. And Jesus, placing himself near the priest, said to him, my son, the title you will give to the book that you will print about my will is this, the kingdom of my divine will in the midst of creatures, the book of heaven, the call of the creature to the order, the place, and the purpose for which it was created by God. See, I want the title also to correspond to the great work of my will. I want the soul, instead of saying creature, we're all souls to God. I want the soul to understand, this particular soul is the priest in question, that his place assigned to him by God is in my will. Now that applies to every single one of us. And until he enters into it, he will be without a place, he will be without order, and he will be without purpose in life. That applies to the whole human race, and therefore you see the chaos that's in the earth today. If he doesn't enter into it, he will be an intruder in the creation with no rights at all, and therefore he will go wandering without peace and without inheritance. Now, I want to stop with the wandering there. It's a very important word. Wandering means you have no address. You have nowhere to lay your head. And I want to bring you back to the book of Genesis, chapter 4, verse 12, where because of killing his brother, Cain was sent wandering around the earth. In other words, he was an intruder, as you are reading here. But I also want you to see that at the time of Christ, when the chosen people absolutely rejected their Messiah and chose the secular arm, we have no king except Caesar, that the result of that was that the entire nation became the wandering Jews. And that was so for 1948 years. It's a very serious matter not to get our inheritance that's given to us in the kingdom of God. Now, if you go to Matthew 19:29 and Matthew 25:34, we are to take the inheritance that's actually given to us. It's given to us for free. It's like parents passing on an inheritance to their children. It's free. It's because of your relationship with the parent that you actually receive it. And so if we refuse this inheritance, it is a deliberate insult to the giver. And Jesus says to him, you must come and take your inheritance and live in your house. Now, your house is actually not your address on earth. Your house is in the divine will, in the bosom of the Most Holy Trinity. That's where we are to live. And we're to live there now, not just wait until we die. Why would you want to live in a foreign house? Why would you want to occupy a land that's not yours? And because it's not yours, you will live unhappy. You will be a servant and the laughing stock of all created things. Now, all created things, as we know, are in the divine will. They cannot move from the divine will because they've no free will. And so they will be totally aware of those who are not into the divine will. So if you go back to Genesis chapter 3, well, first of all, Genesis chapter 2, where the whole of creation was in communion with Adam and Eve, and Genesis chapter 3, when Adam and Eve moved out of the divine will, all the creatures moved away from Adam and Eve, and even the earth refused to cooperate when they wanted to get something out of the earth. They were told that it would produce brambles and briars for you. And so human beings began to call the animals wild animals because they were living in their natural state. And the ones who were wild and not living in their natural state were the human race itself. So all things created by me, because they remain in their place and in order and in perfect harmony with all the fullness of their goods assigned to them by God, you alone want to be unhappy, but it's a voluntary unhappiness. That is the difference. It's something we choose. We choose to reject God. We choose to go down the route of our own will. Therefore, come to your place. It is there. And I call you and I await you. Now, as you know, the Lord has waited 2,000 years for all the yous to come, even though this is addressed to one individual. Therefore, he or she, so you can see it applies to everybody, who will offer to make my will known will be my spokesperson. Now, the person who's offering to make the divine will known should be each one of us. Now, if you put 2 Corinthians 5:20 beside that, St. Paul says that we are ambassadors for Christ. And here you have God telling us that we will be ambassadors for the divine will. And I will entrust to them, that's the people who will make this known to others, the secrets of the kingdom. So all of you who are teachers, and all of you who are willing to spread this knowledge to others, then the Lord will teach you the secrets of the kingdom as you go along. All you've got to do is ask. So after this, then, Louisa said that Jesus showed her the whole of creation, how all created things remain in their place, wanted by God, and therefore in perfect order and in perfect harmony among themselves. Okay, so we're going to be talking about God's order here. This is very important. And because they remain in their place, the supreme will maintains their existence. Now notice that if we remain in the divine will, that the supreme will also maintain our existence. Everything will be fresh and beautiful and ever new, as he does all the time in creation. And order brings communal happiness. That's a very important statement. Disorder in the home among the human beings who live there creates hell in the home. Order and love brings community and unity. Okay, so order brings communal happiness, and it also brings universal strength to all. Now, this is extremely important. The power of a nation is not in its weapons. The power of a nation is the moral strength of its people. And if the people have moral strength, they'll conquer anything. If people do not have moral strength, they can conquer nothing because they haven't even conquered themselves. Okay, so I want to give you an example, the way God gave order to his chosen people at Sinai. He gave them 10 commandments. We call them commandments, but the Jewish people correctly call them 10 words. And in these 10 words, 4 of them applied to the relationship with God and 6 applied to the relationship with each other. And if they kept this order, then their relationship with heaven was going to be right and their relationship with earth was going to be right as well. So let me give you an example. If all of us were living in the same area, and if I kept the 10 commandments, then you can keep your faith. That's your first 4 commandments, your relationship with God. You can keep your property, your wife, your husband, your reputation, and everything to do with you if I simply obey the commandments of God. So if all of us do that, we literally allow human creatures who are not perfect and never will be perfect, we allow them to live in peace and happiness. And so it's only God's order that can actually accomplish that. And the more God's order comes into our own souls, our own minds, our own hearts, the more we also grow in moral and spiritual strengths. And the more God can actually work in us and through us, if that order is there. Now, if the divine order is coming into me and putting everything in me in its right place, then it must go out to the relationships with the people I'm actually living with. Otherwise, there will be terrible distress between the people who are living in the same house as you, because they would be living, there would be disorder and order trying to make some kind of a connection. It won't work. So the order has to come in, into the individual and out through the relationships from that individual. But the stronger the person in the divine will is, the more powerful will be the transforming effect on the people all around you. That's actually quite important. So Jesus says then, what enchantment to see the order and the harmony of all creation. In other words, it's absolutely beautiful to look at, as we know, looking out at the beauty of creation. And Jesus, resuming his teaching, said, my daughter, how beautiful are our works. They are our honour and our perennial glory. Perennial, it'll never stop. All of them remain in their place, and each created thing fulfills its office perfectly. Now watch this. Man alone is our dishonour in our creative work, because by withdrawing from our will, he walks upside down. It's very, very interesting what he's going to say now. And you'll understand society out there much better than you did before. He's walking upside down with his head down to the earth. In other words, the head should be connected with heaven and the feet connected with earth. And it's exactly the opposite. If the head is connected with the earth, then it means the intellect, memory and will are all out of order. And if they're out of order, then the human person and the society that's living like that is completely disordered. So he calls it walking with your head, with your feet up in the air. So with his head down to the earth and his feet up in the air, what disorder, he said. It's disgusting to see them. By walking with his head upside down, he crawls on the earth. That means the intellect, memory and will are all looking to the wrong place. He becomes all upset. That's the disorder. He transforms himself into something very ugly, is what he's trying to say. Because normally the word transforms is used in terms of us being transformed into light. And I think the word they should have used is he deforms himself. So that's why I said he transforms himself into something very ugly. He deforms himself, becomes very ugly. His sight lacks the necessary span to be able to see. He cannot move around in space in order to know things, nor defend himself if his enemy is behind his shoulders, because the shoulders are in the wrong place. And he cannot go too far because, poor one, he has to drag himself with the head instead of walking, because the office of walking belongs to the feet, while the office of the head is to dominate. In other words, you should be governed by your intellect, memory and will, not by the mud of the earth. And unfortunately, people who are feeding on television and the mass media have their heads on the earth, unfortunately. And most of the stuff coming through it, it's ugly. So doing his own will is the true and perfect tumble of man, how to live upside down. And it is the true disorder of the human family. So this is why I care so much that my will be known. In other words, we all have the obligation to try and tell somebody about it, so that the human being may return to his place. He may no longer be dragging himself with his head upside down, but walking on his feet, no longer forming my dishonour and his, but my honour and his. Look yourself. Do creatures not look ugly in seeing them with their heads on the ground? Don't you feel sorry for them to see them so disordered? So he shows her a picture in the next tiny paragraph. And yes, it's absolutely awful. So let's go on to August the 29th, 1926. And here he's going to tell us something extremely important. And it's the exact opposite of what we've just looked at. If human beings don't have God's order, then you can't do anything with it. But if you come into God's order, he's going to show us something that is beyond our wildest dreams. My poor mind, Louisa said, is always returning to the supreme center of the eternal will. And if sometimes I think about something else, Jesus himself, with a message of his, calls my attention to crossing the unending sea of his most holy will. So, since I was thinking about something else, my sweet Jesus was jealous. Now, Exodus 34:14, God is very jealous of anyone who will give themselves to him because he needs that person in order to be able to reach everybody else. God is not jealous in the way that human beings are jealous. Their jealousy is a negative thing. His jealousy is that out of the whole nearly 8 billion that's on the planet, he has very, very few who are prepared to actually let him work with them at this level. And so he wouldn't want you shifting from that at all. Okay, so that's Exodus 34:14. There are other examples as well, but I'll just give you one. So he was jealous. He clasped me to himself and he said, "My daughter, I want you always in my will." This is the thing that is extremely important. He does not want us to shift out at all. Because in the divine will is the nature of good. Now, if you don't look up some of these words in a dictionary, you're going to be in trouble. What do you mean by the nature of good? I've gone to the dictionary looking for the meaning of this word so that I could somehow explain the depth of what he's trying to say. When he says he's going to offer us the nature of good, he's saying the fundamental qualities of good. You remember that in Mark 10:18, Jesus said, "Nobody is good except God alone." So God alone actually holds the nature of good, the fundamental qualities of good, the essential characteristics of what we call good. And Jesus himself said, "Nobody is good except God alone." Okay, so if he's offering us that in the divine will, it is just an unbelievable gift. So in the divine will, you will find the nature or the fundamental qualities or the essential characteristics of what is called good. Only when a good never ends and has no beginning and no ending can it be called true good. In other words, the only real good is eternal. It has to be eternal. That's why Jesus said only God has this characteristic. But if we're entering into this extraordinary relationship with the most blessed Trinity in the divine will, he wants us to experience this. And so our journey into the divine will means that we would be transformed more and more and more into good. That's the transformation that needs to take place. So when a good has a beginning and an end, it's always full of bitterness, fear and anxiety and also disillusion because you're going to lose it. All this renders good itself unhappy, and many times one passes easily from the good of riches to miseries. Let me say that in the language we use. We go from rags to riches or riches to rags. In other words, a person can lose a fortune overnight. You can go from fortune to misfortune, from health to sickness, because all the goods that have a beginning are unstable, fleeting, short-lived, and end up in nothing. So we see people all over the world in the terrible fires and floods and earthquakes losing literally everything, and many of them losing their lives as well, literally in seconds. So if it's short-lived and fleeting, it ends up with nothing, absolutely nothing. Okay, so let's see what lasts forever. It is my supreme will that possesses the nature of true good, because God alone is good, because it has no beginning and no ending, and therefore its good is always the same, always full, always stable. You see, he's immutable, so it doesn't change. Not subject to change. And this is why all that the soul makes enter into the supreme will, all of her acts formed in it, acquire the nature of true good. That is absolutely unbelievable. He alone can do it. This is why all that the soul makes enter into the supreme will, all of her acts formed in it, they acquire the nature of true good, because they are in a stable, immovable will, which contains eternal and immeasurable goods. So, your love, your prayer, your thanksgivings, and everything you do take their place in an eternal beginning that never ends. The other way we say that is in the singularity of the one act of God. That singularity, that one point which contains everything. and it's outside of time. And so our acts entering into that, they go into the timelessness of God, which is really fantastic. So your love, your prayer, your thanksgivings and everything you can do take their place in an eternal beginning that never ends and therefore acquire the fullness of the nature of good. So your prayer acquires its full value and complete fruit. Only Jesus could tell you that. So please appreciate prayer in the divine will, maybe more than you have. So your prayer acquires full value and complete fruit in such a way that you yourself will not be able to understand where the fruits and the goods of your prayer will extend, because he alone knows what he's going to do with these acts in the divine will. It will go around through eternity. It will give itself to all. And at the same time, it will remain always full of its effects. Now, all acts in the divine will are eternal acts. They are universal. So if I want my prayers in the divine will to be for Mary or Joe only, I don't understand divine will. All the prayers are universal and they're also eternal. Your love acquires the nature of true love. Now, only God contains the nature of true love. That's 1 Corinthians 13:13. In the end, there's faith, hope and love. And the greatest of these is love. And 1 Corinthians 14:1, you must want love more than anything else. But you have 1 John 4:7, God himself is love. That's his nature. So if we're allowed to acquire the nature of true love, we are acquiring the possession of God. That's actually what we're doing. And therefore, a way in which you can test your growth and development in the divine will is to just look at how much, if you look, it's easier to look back than any other way to see how much I have changed. Am I a different person than I was? Like Ebenezer Scrooge, we can say, I'm not the man I was. I am a completely different person. Because of what has happened to me. So your love acquires the nature of true love, so that unshakable love, notice unshakable, no event is going to change it. No reaction of any human being to you for any reason whatsoever, political, social, family or otherwise, is going to change your love. Because you've entered into a divine love. And so the love that's coming through you to them is coming from him. So your love acquires the nature of true love. It's unshakable love that never fails, that never ends, that loves all. See the universality of it? So it has to be love without borders. If we say, you know, certain people are not included, then it's not this love. It loves all, it gives itself to all and remains always with the fullness of good of the nature of true love. In other words, he keeps saying that when you operate in the divine will, you can give and give and give and give, but you actually don't lose anything. So to everything that enters into my will, the creative strength of my will communicates its own nature, that is, with all of the divine qualities. And it converts it into its own acts. So it converts it into divine acts. Because the divine will does not tolerate having within itself acts dissimilar to its own. There's your Hebrews 12:14 again. Nothing unholy or unworthy or incomplete or anything like that can enter into the presence of God. Only something that is divine and holy. So it won't tolerate something that's dissimilar to its own. Therefore, it can be said that the acts of the soul done in my will enter the inscrutable ways of God. Now, enter the inscrutable ways of God, an extremely important statement. Romans 11:30 to 36. God's ways are completely inscrutable to us. You also have Isaiah 55 verses 8 to 10, that my ways are not your ways. My ways are as different from your ways as the heavens are from the earth. Okay. Nor can anyone know all of their innumerable effects. It's not actually possible. St. Paul admits that the eye cannot see, ear cannot hear, the heart cannot understand what God has revealed to us. That which has no beginning and no end renders itself incomprehensible to the created mind, because the created mind has a beginning and an ending, and it's utterly limited. Because since the power of an act has no beginning, is missing in them, all the divine things and everything that enters my will render themselves impenetrable and inscrutable. That's why if you don't understand some of this stuff, it has nothing to do with your intelligence. It's to do with the fact that you didn't ask the Lord to actually open up this particular part of the text to you. He has to reveal it, and he will reveal it by infused knowledge. See then the great good of operating in my will. To what a high place it raises the soul, how she's given back the nature of good. I mean, this is incredible. Just as she was delivered from the womb of her creator. On the other hand, anything that can be done outside of my will, even if it is good, cannot be called true good, because it has a beginning and an ending. First of all, because the divine nourishment and its light are missing, and these acts are dissimilar from my acts, taking away from the soul the likeness of the divine image. Now, the divine image was given in Genesis 1:27 and Genesis 2:7. You also have Romans 8:29. And so acts done in the human will only take away from that image. Once my will is removed, the best part is removed, the greatest value of the human works. Therefore, those are works emptied of substance, life, and value. In other words, a waste of time. They are like plants without fruit, food without substance, statues without life, works without retribution, which tire the limbs of the strongest. Oh, how great is the difference between operating in my will and operating without it. So I want to give you 1 Corinthians chapter 2, where Paul describes the massive difference between the spiritual and the unspiritual people. Therefore, be attentive and do not give me this sorrow of making me see even one act in you which does not give of my likeness. Now, he's speaking specifically to Louisa, and insofar as we have given ourselves fully to the Lord, it will apply to us. So in the next paragraph, how do you give Jesus rest? If you go to the 7th hour of the Passion, the 3rd hour in Gethsemane, you'll find that when Jesus wants either comfort or rest, he's actually looking for souls. That's the only way you can give him that rest. So after this, Jesus disappeared, and he came back a little later as though restless because of the offences he had received. Taking refuge in me, he wanted to take rest. And I said to him, my love, I've many things to tell you, many things to establish between you and me. I must ask you that your will be known and that its kingdom have its full triumph. If you rest, I can't tell you anything. I must be silent to let you rest. But of course, she has said all the things he wanted her to say. And Jesus, interrupting me with unspeakable tenderness, pressed me very tightly to himself. He's very good at the hugs, you know. And kissing me, told me, my daughter, how beautiful on your lips is the prayer for the triumph of the kingdom of the supreme will. So there's our encouragement. It is the echo of my own prayer, of my own sighs, and of all my works. Now, I want to see what you wrote. He changes the subject completely. So he came to rest in her. She said all the right things, and then he's fine. So we just need to know how to respond to him when we see him suffering, and you get all the instruction you want in the Hours of the Passion of how to respond. So Jesus changes the subject, and he said, I want to see what you wrote about the title given to the writings about my will. And as he was saying this, he took the book in his hands, and he seemed to be reading what is written on August the 27th, what she's just read. As he was reading, he remained pensive, as though placing himself in profound contemplation, in such a way that I didn't dare to tell him anything. I could only hear that his heart was beating very, very strongly, almost wanting to explode. And then he pressed the book to his breast and he said, I bless this title. I bless it from my heart, and I bless all the words with regard to my will. And raising his right hand with enchanting majesty, he pronounced the words of blessing. So there's Jesus, the high priest. And having done this, he disappeared. So let's go to August the 31st, 1926. Louisa said, I was doing my acts and my little rounds in the divine will, according to my usual way. I myself see how I can do nothing but go around in it because it's my dear inheritance. There's the little bit that's important. So don't forget, if you don't do any rounds and you don't do anything, you haven't visited your inheritance and you haven't claimed it. My way of understanding rounds, which could be very unorthodox, is that you're actually signing your name to your inheritance. So she said, it's my dear inheritance given to me by sweet Jesus, in which there is so much to do and to learn, and neither my short life in the exile nor the whole of eternity will be enough for me to fulfill all the offices which are most extensive. Okay, so notice that she understands she is going to be extremely busy in heaven. The other person that I know personally and can just say off the top of my head is Saint Therese of Lisieux, who said she was going to work really hard in heaven until the end of history. So Louisa says here that this extensive inheritance, whose boundaries cannot even be seen because it's the kingdom of God. And the more one goes around it, the more new things one learns. However, many things can be seen which cannot be understood. Now, this is typical. That's 1 Corinthians 2:9, that you can't say everything you see. It's not possible. There is no earthly language for heavenly realities. So let's go to the next paragraph, where Jesus tells us that everything about you and me and about redemption and about history and about the church and about everything was decided ab aeterno, in eternity, in the bosom of the Most Blessed Trinity. So, surprising me while I was doing my acts in his adorable will, my beloved Jesus told me, my daughter, look at how many things we issued in creation with our fiat for the good of man's nature. Now, this time the word nature is used in a different way. And this is what's so confusing about these writings, is that whoever translates it seems to use the same word in many different ways. You're talking about man's body at this particular point. In other words, our spirit incarnated in a body. So it's for the needs of our bodies. Everything that our will had established to issue, nothing was missing in its fulfillment. Now, just as everything that we were to release in creation was established and nothing was absent from our roll call from eternity, everything was included, so was everything that we were to issue for the good of souls also established. Now, if you have your own book, make sure you colour that everything that was to bring you to the fullness of your calling and to bring you to the highest place in heaven was established eternally. Everything. So everything we were to issue for the good of souls also established. And in fact, we did issue it, and it was so great as to surpass by thousands and thousands of times all the goods that can be seen in creation. But both those that were to serve the good of man's nature, that's our bodily existence, with those that were to serve the good of his soul. So you can see my interpretation is correct, because there is the separation of the needs of the body and the needs of soul. Everything remained deposited in our will. So everything that you need personally for body or soul has been established eternally. So don't be afraid when they want to prevent you from buying food. The Lord has his ways and means. So, but both those which were to serve the good of man's body and those that were to serve the good of his soul, everything remained deposited in our will, because we do not entrust our things to everyone or anyone, knowing that our will alone could preserve them for us. And of course, if human beings got their hands on them, they would interfere and change it, as they do with everything, even with human nature itself. So the divine will would preserve them whole and entire and beautiful, just as they were delivered from the eternal womb. So more so, since the divine will alone has the preserving and multiplying power, which while it gives, it actually loses nothing. And we've been told this over and over again. The Lord can give absolutely everything we need, but it is nothing to him because we have no idea how small we are. So in the next section, he is telling us that each one of us is a heaven all by itself, and he wants to people it with a sun and moon and stars and all the rest of it. And he wants to do something really creatively wonderful in each one of us individually. Just as he created billions of galaxies, not just billions of stars, but billions of galaxies. Now, how many things there are in my will which I must give to creatures, but they have to come into its kingdom in order to receive them. God has infinite capacity, but if we don't actually go there, we can't receive them. That's a bit like saying the supermarket is full of food, but if I actually don't go to a supermarket and do anything to get food, then I will be left hungry. But it's nobody's fault except mine. I just didn't go. So if we don't actually come into the divine will, how can we receive all that he has for us? Just as the human being could never partake of the goods of creation if it didn't want to live under the heavens and have a place on the earth where the things created by me surrounded it like a crown. In other words, if you don't want to live on the earth, you won't cooperate with life. In the same way, if the soul does not want to come to live under the heaven of my will, you see, as incarnated beings, we're living under the heavens that are above us. And he's now saying that our soul needs to live under the heaven of his holy will in the midst of the goods which our paternal goodness issued in order to make her happy, to establish her, to enrich her. She will never be able to partake of these goods. They will be as though foreign and unknown to her. I've Matthew 11:20 there. More so, this is very important. Since each soul would be a distinct heaven. Now, 2 Corinthians 5:17, Paul says that each one of us is a new creation. Each one of us is a creation because of the act of bringing us into being. Each of us is a new creation because of redemption. And now Jesus wants to raise that even higher and says that each one of us is a new heaven. Now, the word heaven actually means the canopy over our heads. So that's going to be planets and stars and so on. So since each soul would be a distinct heaven, which our supreme will would delight in adorning with a sun more radiant and with stars brighter than those that can be seen in creation, one more beautiful than the other. So in other words, God intended our interior to be a whole creation in itself. And no matter whether you have the same genetics as a twin that you're born with, you're still a completely different world for the Lord. Completely different. Everybody is completely unique. So he wants each one of us to be utterly radiant. Now, as we go on in the higher volumes, he's going to be talking about peopling this interior heaven. Now, for human nature, there's the sun over your head for everyone, while for souls, that's in the interior, there is a sun for each one of them. There is an individual heaven. There is an ever-springing fount. There is a fire that is never extinguished. There is divine air to be breathed. There is celestial food that makes the soul grow in an admirable way in the likeness of the one who created her. Luke 17:21, the kingdom of God is within you. The kingdom of God is that area, that space, that locus where God reigns and where God can do his wonderful creative redemption, redeeming and sanctifying work in us. In other words, let the three fiats be expressed in us. Oh, how many things my will keeps prepared and established to give to one who actually wants to live in the kingdom. Notice you have to want it. And we're going on to talk about that in, I think, the next message. You have to actually want it. Because if we want something, we'll go and get it. We'll turn head over heels to try and acquire that darn thing. But if you don't want it, you'll do nothing about it. So you have to actually really, really want it. And where a person arrives at in the divine will depends to a very large extent on how much they actually want it and therefore how much they are prepared to pay, as in terms of sacrificing your own will and all the rest that the Lord wants from us. So how many things that the Lord has established to give us, but you have to actually want it. So it does not want to entrust its goods outside of its kingdom. So you have to be in there in the kingdom, because it knows that if they get outside of its boundaries, they will neither be appreciated nor understood. There's your pearls before swine. You can't do that. And you know yourself, trying to talk this language to somebody who's not in the divine will, they haven't a clue what you're saying. More so, since the divine will alone knows how to preserve and keep its goods alive, and only one who lives in the divine will is capable of, number one, understanding the celestial language. That's number one. He says only one who lives in it. Now, he doesn't say one who just does a few acts every now and then. He doesn't say that. And number two, only one who lives in the divine will is capable of receiving its gifts. Okay. And number three, only one who is living in the divine will is capable of looking and understanding and appreciating its beauty. And number four, only one living in the divine will is capable of forming one single life with the divine will. Take those four things and write them out separately for yourself, and it'll make huge sense. On the other hand, one who doesn't want to live in the divine will in its kingdom is incapable of understanding its goods. Her tongue will not be able to speak or adapt itself to the language of the kingdom, nor will she be able to look at its beauties. On the contrary, she will remain blind because of the intense light that is in the divine will. So there's your 1 Corinthians 2 verses 14 to 15 again. The one who will not enter into a spiritual relationship with the Lord remains blind. They don't actually see. Now, in the next paragraph, what we have is the power of the human will to destroy everything, absolutely everything that God has planned for us. See then, for how long have all the goods that we must give the children of the supreme fiat been issued from our paternal womb? Everything has been prepared since the time of creation. Nor will we withdraw because of the delay. We will keep waiting. Now, he has said that many times. Another place he has said that the human generations won't finish until he gets his purpose. No sooner than the creature places her will at the footstool of ours to let it dominate, will we open the doors for her. Now, there's something very specific said there. And we need to do this. I do it every single night to make sure he hears me. That I place my will in the hands and in the Immaculate Heart of our Blessed Mother, and that she is to place it at the footstool of the Lord. And she's to do it at every nanosecond of my life up to and including my last breath. She's authorized to do it for me. She has my permission. She has my permission to take this will and hold on to it. That is absolutely essential. And I just need to point it out as essential. Not as a nice few words that you will say, but that's something you're actually doing. And that if you hand over your will like that, that you are authorizing our Blessed Mother to actually deal with it. And therefore she has rights. It's terribly important for us to understand that this is not a case of just saying nice words or nice prayers, that we're actually handing over our will. Okay. Very important. No sooner than the creature places her will at the footstool of ours to allow the divine will to dominate, will we open the doors for her. You see the condition. We will open the doors to let her enter because it was the human will that closed the doors, that's in Genesis chapter 3, to ours, and opened the doors to all misery. Okay. And to all weakness and passions and so on. So it was not her memory or her intelligence that placed themselves against the Creator, even though they concurred. It was her will. So we have to understand that sin is in the will, and we have to understand that our giving of ourselves to God is in the will. It has nothing to do with feelings. It's nothing to do with you feeling a wonderful close relationship with God or anything else. I can hand over a gift to you with no feelings, but I'm still handing it to you. And we hand over our will regardless of whether you feel anything or you don't feel it. If we use feelings as the measure or the thermometer, it's all over. Feelings are like the weather forecast. So it was the human will that had the first act and broke all the bonds, all the relationships with the will so holy. More so, since all good, and we've been talking about the nature of good, and all evil is enclosed in the human well, that needs to be underlined in many colours. All good and all evil is enclosed in the human will. The regime, the dominion is its own. And so once the will has failed in good, everything fails, loses the order, decays from its origin and becomes ugly. VIP. VIP. It's in the will. It doesn't matter how you feel. You could feel very upset about something and absolutely forgive somebody in your will. Doesn't matter how upset you feel about what they're doing to you. And since it was the human will that placed itself against mine, causing all goods to fail man, this is why I want his will, because he wants us to recover. And in exchange, I want to give him mine. Now, my reaction to that is a Latin one, O admirabile commercium. What a marvellous exchange. O admirabile commercium. Imagine I give this silly human will that only causes me trouble to him and he gives me a divine will in its place. There's absolutely no way you can make any comparison. No way at all. So I want to give him mine, to give it back to him, so that I can give back to him all the goods that have failed him. Therefore, my daughter, be attentive. Never give life to your will if you want mine to reign. So that's why I've been saying ever since I began classes in the divine will that on a daily basis we have to be saying to the Lord, not my will, but thine be done. Not my will, but thine be done. Okay. In the next paragraph, he goes on to tell us that the human will paralyzes the soul so that it can do nothing. And all you have to do is look out the window at society all around us and you can see them paralyzed in everything. It's frightening. It's frightening. After this, Jesus kept silent, remaining all afflicted because of the great evil produced in souls by the human will, to the point of disfiguring his beautiful image, that image given in Genesis 1:27 and 2:7, infused in them in creating them. And sighing, he added, my daughter, the human will paralyzes the life of my will in the soul. Now, paralysis is a terrible thing because without my will, the divine life does not circulate in the soul, which more than pure blood preserves her motion, her vigor, her perfect use of her mental faculties in such a way as to make her grow healthy and holy, so that we may recognize our likeness in her. Now, here you've got a description of divine health coming to a person who is in the divine will. In other words, the complete integration of that person actually takes place. Oh, how many souls are paralyzed without my will, he said. What a pitiful scene to see the human generations almost all paralyzed in the soul. And this is a very good description of society today. Therefore, they are irrational. They're blind to seeing good. They are deaf for listening to the truth. They're mute in teaching it. They are inert for holy works. They're immobile in walking on the path to heaven because the human will, preventing the circulation of my will, forms the general paralysis in the souls of creatures. So I want to give you Isaiah 6:9, a holy man who had a vision of God in the temple and suddenly he said, what a wretched man I am. He said, I'm like the rest of them. And he said, my mouth. And as soon as he acknowledged his mouth, because we commit so many sins with our mouth and we're not even aware of it, his mouth was cleansed. I want to give you Matthew 13, verses 14 and 15 as well. It's the same, he said, for the human body. The majority of illnesses, especially things like paralysis, are caused by a lack of blood circulation. Wouldn't you love the doctors to know? If the blood circulates well, the human being is robust and strong. He feels no disquiet. But if some irregularity begins in the blood circulation, indispositions, weaknesses and consumption begin. I think consumption is what we used to call TB. And if the circulation becomes quite irregular, he becomes paralyzed because that blood which does not circulate and does not flow rapidly in his veins forms the grave evils of the human body. What would creatures not do if they knew there was a remedy for the regularity of blood circulation? who knows where they would travel to and what trouble they would go to in order to get a cure. And yet, there is the great remedy of my will to avoid any evil of the soul, so as not to become paralyzed in good, but to grow strong and robust in sanctity. I love those two words, to grow strong and robust in holiness. That's a very, very wonderful word. Now, that strength and that robustness has to do with the fact that the soul is healed and that it is becoming stronger and stronger in virtue and in grace and in likeness to the Lord. And therefore, the Lord can do more and more and more with this person. Strong and robust in sanctity. But who takes it? Who takes the divine will? And still, it's a remedy given out for free. Nor do they have to wander around in order to get it. Rather, it's always ready to give itself and to constitute itself as the regular life of the creature. And what sorrow, my daughter, what sorrow, what sorrow. Now, it's very close to the time. Do you want me to start another one?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go on to September the 3rd, 1926. And this is extremely important as well. He's just been telling us the extraordinary thing that happens when we enter into the divine will and grow robust and strong. Now he's going to tell us that everything depends on your desire. If you don't really want it, you're going to do nothing. If you don't really want to grow in holiness, you're not going to pay the price. And so we have to ask, how much of God do we really want? It's a very important one to finish with tonight. Louisa said, I was feeling all identified with my sweet Jesus, and I was praying him from the heart to watch over my poor soul so that nothing might enter into it which was not his will. Now, while I was doing this, my dear good, my sweet life moved in my interior and said, my daughter, the desire for a good, this is extremely important, the desire for knowing that good purges the soul and disposes her intelligence to understand it. Now, notice what helps the intelligence. It's not your IQ. It's not your level of education. It's your desire to know God. That takes the excuse away from us all. It's the desire for a good, the desire for knowing it. It purges the soul and it disposes her intelligence to understand it, her memory to remember it. Her will feels the appetite for it being wet, to make of it its food and life. And the desire moves God to give her that good and to make it known. In other words, if you actually want it, the Lord will give it to you. But if you only want a tiny bit, that's all you will get. St. Therese of Lisieux says you will receive from God exactly how much you have confidence to receive from him. If you want everything, that's fine. So the desire for a good, for knowing it, is like appetite for food. Where there is appetite, one feels the taste, eats with pleasure, remains satisfied and content with having taken the food, and is left with the desire to enjoy it again. On the other hand, if there's no appetite, the same food, which is enjoyed so eagerly by one person, causes nausea and disgust to someone else who has no appetite, and he may reach the point of suffering because of it. That is the way desire works for the soul. It's like appetite. And in seeing that the desire for my things is her delight, to the point of making them her food and life, I abound so much in giving that I never tire of giving. Now notice, he opens the floodgates of generosity towards us if we are interested, if we actually want it. On the other hand, for one who doesn't desire them, because the appetite is missing, one feels nausea for my things, and that gospel saying is repeated. It will be given to one who has, while one who does not desire my goods, my truths and my celestial things will be deprived of the little that he has. We have seen whole societies lose faith today, haven't we? They've lost the little faith they had because they lost their desire for God. This is a just penalty for one who does not desire and has no appetite for and wants to know nothing about the things that belong to me. In other words, why would the Lord leave a treasure in your hands when you're not even interested? And if he has any little thing at all, it's right that it be taken away from him and be given to those who possess much. Do you remember the man with the 10 talents? And the man with 1 talent? Matthew 13:12 is the first saying. Okay. Now, in the next paragraph, he talks about the wonderful liberality with which he wants to give to us. Everything depends on us being open, wanting it, and ready to receive. That's all. We don't have to be special. Then after this, I was thinking about and identifying with the Holy Divine Will and finding myself in its immense light. That's 1 Timothy 6:16. God dwells in unapproachable light. I felt its divine rays penetrating so deep. Now notice how badly she wants the Lord. Into me as to transform me into that very light. 2 Corinthians 3:18. You are transformed into the one whom you contemplate. And Jesus coming out of my interior told me, my daughter, how beautiful, how penetrating, how communicative, how transforming is the light of my will. Now notice the word transforming is used correct there because you're being transformed into light, whereas the word was used wrongly earlier. It was deformed. Okay. It is more than the sun which, pounding on the earth, gives with liberality the effects that its light contains, nor does it wait to be asked, but spontaneously, as its light fills the surface of the earth, it gives what it has to everything it encounters. Now, this is the liberality of God. It's for everybody. It's for everything. He gives and gives and gives. All he wants is to have someone to give to. So he gives the example of the sun there. It gives sweetness and taste to the fruit, colour and fragrance to the flower, development to the plants, and to all things it gives its effects and goods it contains. And he makes no exception with anybody. This is where we have to become like God and have love without boundaries and prayer without boundaries. That it's for everybody in all generations. It's enough that the light touches them, penetrates them and warms them for it to accomplish its work. If you're really worried about somebody, you could, after fusing in the divine will, just simply say, Lord, send forth your light and renew that person and renew everybody to the ends of the earth. Send forth your light. Because he says it's enough that the light actually just touches them. It will do its transforming work. So my will is more than the sun. You're expecting this. As long as the soul exposes herself to its vivifying rays, that's very important, and she banishes the darkness and the night of her human will, you see, there's no point in doing one unless you do the other. You must banish the darkness of the human will. Its light rises and invests the soul, penetrating into her inmost fibres. The Lord will go as far as you are open to dispel from her the shadows and the atoms of the human will. Now, the atoms are the tiny little bits of leftovers. You think you've given the human will and you notice these little shadows and atoms. And you find that in reading these volumes that the Lord often says to Louisa that he's tidying up something that she's doing. So, as its light pounds on the soul and she receives it, the divine will communicates all the effects it contains, that's all of the divine qualities. Because coming out of the Supreme Being, my will contains all the qualities of the divine nature, and that's what's poured into us. So, in investing her, it communicates the goodness, the love, the power, the firmness, that is fortitude, the mercy, and all the divine qualities, but not in a superficial way, in a real way. And therefore, we have a way of actually testing how we're doing in the divine will, because we should be growing in all of these areas. In a real way, such as to transmute all of its qualities into the human person. So much so that the soul will feel within herself as her own the nature, that's all the qualities, of true goodness, power, sweetness and mercy. Look at the sweetness. That is in the face of all trouble. Remember reading the Hours of the Passion, Louisa so frequently says about the sweetness of Jesus to the men who are torturing him. And so with all the rest of the supreme qualities. My will alone has this power to convert its virtues into one's nature. That is the transformation, that we become more and more like the one who made us. But only for one who abandons herself prey to its light, that means you have to really give the will and to its heat, and keeps the tenebrous night of her own will away from her. So the conditions are not difficult to understand, because the human will is the true and perfect night of the human soul. So we have a lot there to think about, and I think it's very rich. So thank you for joining us. God bless.